We're going to discuss. We need to take this week and another week to discuss probably the orisas of Bishul. We have to move from more severe to less severe. We have to understand that an issur d'oraisa is much more intense, and we take it much more seriously than an issur d'rabbanan. Not that issur d'rabbanan are not important. It just happens to be that we need to go in preferential order and deal with the Torah prohibitions of Bishul first. I know there were questions about what I said about heating up of instant foods last week, instant coffee and hot cocoa and things like that. I will get back to that after I discuss this topic. So, last week we discussed Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi. So let's move on now to Irui, and that is the pouring onto something. Meaning, is it the same level of cooking if I take from a Kli Rishon and I pour it onto something? Is that like putting it in a Kli Rishon, right? If the water is falling from the urn onto food, is that the same thing as actually putting it in the urn? Is that the same level of Bishul? So, an Irui Kli Rishon means that one pours a hot liquid from the pot taken off the fire directly on top of a food. And on the other hand, if one first pours the liquid into a cup and afterwards puts the food into it, that would be a Kli Sheni, right? That's what we discussed last week. So the question is Irui Kli Rishon, is that a Kli Rishon or is that a Kli Sheni? Because it's in between. The flow, is that more of a Kli Rishon flow or is that a Kli Sheni? That obviously will depend on what we do with it.
Explanation of the difference of like using foods, because I'm not sure what you mean by pouring or dipping.
Meaning, a Kli Sheni is the cup that receives the water from the urn. Meaning, that cup that's received the water right now, this is a Kli Sheni.
Right.
Right? But if I take, let's say this pitcher is the Kli Rishon. This is the urn that's on the fire. That's okay. Heated up. This is the Kli Rishon, right? So this flow that comes from here into the cup. Oh, it's closed. Sorry. This flow that comes from the pitcher into the cup. When it's hitting, is that a Kli Sheni or a Kli Rishon? That's the question. It's coming from a Kli Rishon. Do we consider like it's cooking in a Kli Rishon? But at the same time, it's landing in a Kli Sheni. So do we consider that maybe it's cooking with a Kli Sheni? What's that flow? What do we consider that as it hits the food? And it will have an important implication, as we'll touch upon that in a second. So this is actually a machlokas in Tosos. Tosos have a machlokas in Shabbos and other Gemaras as well. And the Ri says that, Rabbeinu Yitzhak says that Irui Kli Rishon is the same as a Kli Rishon, whether I'm putting the food in the Kli Rishon, whether I'm pouring the Kli Rishon onto it, it's the same type of Bishul, it's the same thing. The Rashbam, though, the Rashbam of, like, Perish on the Torah fame, he also was a Mefarish on the Gemara, he also was a Posek. So the Rashbam says it's like a Kli Sheni. We generally follow, and this is what the Shulchan Aruch seems to say, is the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says, and there's another area of Halacha where Irui Kli Rishon matters, and we're not going to go down this path right now, but that is when it comes to Kashrus. Meaning, we know that there's overlap in the laws of Bishul of Shabbos and Bishul of Kashrus as well. Meaning, whatever would be considered cooking by Shabbos should also be considered cooking enough to transfer flavors of milks and fleishiks as well. It's the same principles. Yeah, so lettuce, bow, all those same principles work as well. So Rabbeinu Tam says, and this is important in the realm of Kashrus, that if I have, let's say I have milchigs in a Kli Rishon. I have a pot of milk that's on a Kli Rishon, and it pours onto a roast. Okay? So what's the status of the roast?
Hot milk.
Hot milk from a Kli Rishon. Yatza lettuce bow. I didn't put the roast in the milk. Is the whole roast trafe? So no. The rule is, Rabbeinu Tam says, that if it comes to Irui Kli Rishon, if it's only a flow that's coming from a Kli Rishon, so it only cooks Kedei Klipa. It only cooks the outer layer of the roast. Where you can, if you want to save the roast, you can cut away about half an inch of the roast, of where the milk fell, and the rest of the roast is 100% kosher, without question. Okay? There are some...
You have to cut away...
And wash it off. And it's 100% kosher. Because the rule, says Rabbeinu Tam, is that Iroi Kli Rishon is only mevashel, it only cooks kedei klipa, only cooks the outer layer. The intensity of the flow is not the same intensity if I took the roast and dunked it in the hot milk. It wouldn't be the same level of cooking. Now, but I want to push that aside, because in the realm of Shabbos, it doesn't make a difference. Why? Because whether I cook the whole roast or I cook a little bit of the roast, I cooked. So I don't care how much I'm cooking on Shabbos, any amount of cooking is usser. So Rabbeinu Tam says that's the type of level of cooking. It's not complete cooking. It cooks a little bit when it's just an irui, a pour from a kli rishon. So the Shulchan Aruch writes in Shinyan Ches that one should not pour from a kli rishon onto something uncooked, since irui does have the power to cook. He says, "Asur litein tavlin bekara." It's usser to put spices in a plate on a bowl, ula aros aleihem mikli rishon, and to pour from a kli rishon onto them. And this touches upon the question that was raised last time of the teacups, the cup that has a residual water in it. Now it depends what the residual water, what the droplets are from. So Rav Moshe has a chew about this, Nikos Moshe or Achayim in Chelek Aleph Siman Tzadi Gimel, and he says that if a person wants to pour hot water from the urn into a cup with droplets of water from a cup that was washed out, it was initially cold water, meaning I did the dishes, I washed out a teacup, and it's sitting in the rack. I want to take a hot cup of tea now, and it was cold water. The whole time it was cold water that I washed out with. And I want to take cold water. I want to take hot water from the urn and to pour that water onto the droplets of cold water that were always cold the whole time, the entire process, into the cup. So Rav Moshe says it's an issue. He says, it's true, you'll tell me, it's a psik ratio delo nichalei. Psik ratio means that it's a malacha that's going to happen inevitably, but I don't care about it. What's the source of psik ratio nichalei? The Gemara in Shabbos says that in the olden days in Yerushalayim, they did not have Paw Patrol, but what they had was chicken heads. Children played with chicken heads. That's how they were entertained. So they would, after you did the shechita, you took a chicken head, you gave it to the kids, and they played with it like a ball. So it's Shabbos. It's Shabbos. My kid's crying. He has nothing to play with. He didn't win anything in groups, and he only needs something to play with. So I want to give him a chicken head. The only way to get a chicken head is to remove it from the body. I got to shech the animal. So the Gemara says, psik resha. Lipsok, a hefsek, ratio of the head. I've cut off the head, velo nichale. I don't care that I did shchita. I did 100% kasher shchita. But do I care that I killed the animal? I violated the malach of shochet, of killing an animal? Do I care about that? No. If I lived in a world where it was possible to get the chicken head off the animal and not kill it, I would do that. But the only way to get the chicken head is to kill the animal. So the Gemara uses that as a classic example of inevitable malacha, they don't care if it happens. That's the example you use. So we use the expression psik resha, that's literally what it means.
Where did you get a chicken without a head from?
I'm not sure. But so this is the example the Gemara gives. And that means in inevitable malacha, then I don't care about the outcome. I want something else. When I pour the hot water from the urn onto the cold droplets in the cup, am I interested in the fact that I'm cooking the droplets of water? No, it's not what I care about. I'm not interested in the droplets of water. I want the water from the urn. There happens to be droplets of water, and they're being cooked. So Rav Moshe says, nevertheless, since we're dealing with an Isser d'Oraisa here, remember, this is Bishul mid'Oraisa, from a Kli Rishon is cooking according to the Torah, he says it's Usser. You have to make sure you wipe out the cup, says Rav Moshe, before you pour from the urn into the cup, because it's Iroi Kli Rishon. Iroi Kli Rishon cooks on a d'Oraisa level. Therefore, you have to wipe out the cup.
What if it's warm? One second.
So, the Sefer Shvisas HaShabbos says that's very nice, but it's not the Minhag Olam. He says, you looked around Yerushalayim, none of the Gedolim did this. Rabbia Omer, Ravaji Yosef has a tshuva, where he gives a number of reasons why a person could be lenient, and he says, some Rishonim say, sick Resha, is mutter 100%. I don't care though, drop is going to be cooked. The Rashbam says Ikli Rishon doesn't cook at all like we saw before. What about him? The Yerushalmi says it's not asur min haTorah to cook that with a kli that's no longer on the fire. And Rav Avraham Yosef in his classic style wants to be mitzarif. He wants to build an edifice of a lot of different kulas, a lot of different leniencies together. Each leniency on its own can't stand. But if I take four or five leniencies and I stack them on top of each other, then maybe that's enough of a reason to allow it. And he wants to be melamed zchus. He says, those people who don't wash out the cup, they have what to rely on, he says. Lamaisa, though, a person should dry out the cup. This is Rav Moshe Feinstein. This is generally the minhag in America. One should dry out the cup before refilling it. And that's the halacha. However, if you drink a cup of tea and the droplets were already cooked before, you already enjoyed a hot cup of tea, and the droplets have already cooled down. So Rav Moshe says that in such a case, you can be lenient. You don't have to wipe out an already drunken from cup that used to contain hot liquids. And he says that a repeated bishul, generally we say that there is bishul achar bishul when it comes to liquids. That's what we're familiar with, right? Putting the saucy chicken on the blech, all that, right? We're familiar with that. That is generally the approach here. But he says, because we already here have a machlokas about Iruri Kli Rishon, and it's already a machlokas about recooking liquids, whether it's really going to be usser. And so Rav Moshe says, in the case of droplets of water that were already cooked, and now they cool down. So this is Rav Moshe, I'll be lenient in that case.
Question.
Yeah.
So let's say you're making like two or three cups of tea.
Yeah.
And you have one cliché that you're planning to pour
into
like three cups. So you have to dry it between
each. No, because...
But there's not tea in that cup.
But it doesn't matter. It was hot water. Once there was water that was already cooked, it was already mavushal, it was already above 120. Right. So Rav Moshe says, I'll allow to be lenient in such a case. Because in that situation, he feels that we can combine together those leniencies. The leniency of the fact that some people say that Iruri Kli Rishon doesn't cook and we don't really care about the droplets, combined with the fact that some opinions say that you are allowed to reheat already heated liquids on Shabbos that have cooled down.
You can use the same cliché for multiple cups of tea.
Correct.
But up until a point, because then it will be cooled off.
It doesn't matter, says Rav Moshe. It doesn't matter. Once it was already cooked, liquids, so then it's fine. Once it was already cooked, Rav Moshe says, in this case, only in the case of Iruri Kli Rishon falling on droplets that have already been cooked, he'll allow it. In that specific case. So again, what's the rule? When it comes to cold droplets that were always cold, you should dry out the cup. If the droplets were once cooked on that Shabbos, then you don't have to dry out the cup, says Rav Moshe Feinstein. The Shulchan Aruch says that one may pour from a kli sheni onto uncooked foods, except when it comes to kali bishul. Meaning, essentially, we're lenient when it comes to irui kli sheni. Meaning, I have the urn, I fill up a cup from the urn, this is now kli sheni. When I pour from that kli sheni, I can pour pretty much onto anything, except Kali HaBishol. That touches upon the discussion last time. What's the status of tea? Is tea Kali HaBishol? Is tea not Kali HaBishol? Personally, I would have no problem at all pouring from a kli sheni directly onto the tea bag in the kli shlishi. If one wants to be machmer, then certainly that would be, if one wants to be machmer for the mishabura, that would certainly be appropriate as well. But you're already pouring from a kli sheni, that's already an extra chumrah, because there's a machlokas whether there's iruri kli rishon. But pouring from a kli sheni onto something, so in such a case, that would be fine according to most shitas. Again, those who are generally machmer for the mishabura about tea essence and things like that would probably be machmer in this case as well, because the mishabura is very careful about tea leaves.
So if you still have tea, half a cup of tea or coffee left in your cup that cooled down and you want to have it.
Yeah, fine. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Good. Okay, I want to go back now to the discussion about the instant coffees, instant hot cocoa, because this touches upon this issue. So, some people said, they heard, they read in other places that about the instance, you can't do it with Iruri Kli Rishon. So, let me tell you, based on what we saw already, we see from Rav Moshe that Iruri Kli Rishon is... or he's already willing to be lenient in other areas, especially if something was already cooked, right? So I went again today to check on YouTube, and I saw how instant coffee was made, how instant hot chocolate was made, and I saw that generally they're all made the same way. They're already cooked. They're already cooked before. We have plenty of room here, no?
There's a seat here.
Saved it for you. So the Shmir Shabbos Kilchus writes, this is in the new edition in Perak Aleph in Sif Samach Aleph. So he says, he writes very clearly that you can put all instant things can be put directly into a klisheni. Meaning you can put water in a klisheni, meaning you take water from the urn into the first cup, take the instant coffee, take the instant cocoa, dump it right in. Says Rav Neuvert, not a problem at all. Why? Because Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, because all of those things are already cooked in the plant, 100%. Now, I said last week I would be fine with even pouring it from the urn if you put the instant coffee or the instant hot cocoa into that first receptacle to receive the hot water. So I don't change what I said. I'm aware that Rav Neuvert says about, that he says a klisheni. I also saw that Rav Nissen Karelitz, one of the great poskim of Bnei Brak, so he writes in his Chut Shani and Chelek Beis, he says, Kafe namas mevushel hu. Instant coffee is already cooked. Vafilu imhu misbashel rakla de kitor. Even if it was only used through steaming, mikamakom gamza koach haba min ha'esh, v'shapar hafei bishol inyan shikra mevushel inyan Shabbos. It's enough of bishol for Shabbos. Ela dahamish shimru, the mishabur as a chumrah. Regarding, and we'll touch upon this later, about things that are solid, but they melt. Like instant coffee, instant hot chocolate, or sugar. Shelo litzno b'kli rishon, not to put it in a kli rishon. Umutro litzno b'kli sheni, you can put it in a kli sheni. Now, the Rav Nissen Karelitz doesn't say, this is the area where it's unclear. The Chafetz Chaim only has an issue with putting it in a kli rishon. But he doesn't have an issue necessarily with Iri Kli Rishon. We don't know if he would go that far. I think that Rav Moshe would allow it. Even though Rav Moshe doesn't say it explicitly, based on what we saw about heating up the drops, it could be Rav Moshe may allow it. But most explicitly, Rav Yitzchak Abadi, who is a posek in Lakewood, so he writes, and it's, Rav Abadi is generally a makel, so I'm going to take this with a grain of salt, no pun intended, but he writes here in his Or Yitzchak in Kuf Samech Dalad, Sheila, imutu la ros mikli rishon agabe sukar, kafe namas, koko namas uchadoma. Can you pour from a kli rishon, can you pour directly from the urn onto sugar, instant coffee, instant hot chocolate? Tshuva, lefi meitav yediati, according to the best of my knowledge, heim kvar muvushalim, they are cooked, umutzer, and is mutter. And therefore, again, I am literally dirt beneath the feet of a Neuvert and the Shmir Shabbos. I'm not coming to be cholik, but I still feel that one who does pour from Eli Karishan onto those instant things, it would certainly be okay. Yeah.
Why is instant oatmeal different?
Because it is not necessarily cooked in the plant. The processing to get it there is not the same.
And what about the instant ones?
What? The instant, like baby oatmeal? So those all, that's probably what we consider Kali HaBishel. That's probably Kali HaBishel, and I would use a Kli Shlishi, because it literally disintegrates the second it hits water. Exactly. So it's definitely Kali HaBishel. I would probably use a Kli Shlishi over there.
What about the tradition soups?
Tradition soups, they are, from what I understand, they are par cooked. They're par boiled already, meaning they are designed to cook instantly. We all know from camp, noodles, whatever, right?
Yeah.
The noodles.
But they're sort of, they're cooked.
The noodles are not 100% cooked, from what I understand. They're not all the way there, and they are designed to be Kali HaBishel. The whole kunst of a tradition soup is to cook like that. There could be also issues of kneading. Of lush as well, because when you put it in, it becomes like a very thick mixture. That lush could be another issue as well by the tradition soups. Okay, let's move on to ladles. I know there were questions about ladles last time, so let's get into that. So Tosos and Avodah Zarah and Daf Lamed Gimel has a suffix whether a bowl placed into a kli rishon is like a kli rishon or a kli sheni, i.e. a ladle. A ladle is a bowl that you put in a kli rishon. And this turns to a machlokas achronim regarding what is the status of a ladle that only goes into a kli rishon for a short amount of time. The Mishnah writes in Shin Yud Ches and Sifkat and Pei Zayin that there's no question that if the ladle's on the pot, when it's boiling, it's a kli rishon. If you leave a ladle on a soup pot, on the fire, there's other issues with that as well. But let's say you leave a ladle on the pot, on the fire, and it's sitting there in the heat, so that ladle becomes a kli rishon. But even, says the Mishabur, if it's put in for a short while, there's reason to say that one should treat it, the ladle, machmer, to be machmer as a kli rishon, even when it only remained there for a little bit amount of time. However, there's a steer, there's a contradiction in the Mishabur.
What are we worried about here? Like with the tea, you are about cooking the tea. But with the soup, it's already cooked and you're eating the soup.
So good, we'll get there in a moment. We're just, we're building up.
Please.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a contradiction though in the Mishabura. Because earlier in the Mishabura, in Sifkat and Memhe, in the same Simen, when discussing Bishal Achar Afia, the idea that it's true you can cook after cooking something, but you can't cook something that has already been baked, since it's two methods of cooking, he writes that since we're concerned about Bishal Achar Afia, one should avoid putting bread into soup. At least making sure, says the Chafetz Chaim, that the soup comes from a pot, a kli rishon, via a ladle, a kli sheni, into a bowl, which is a kli shlishi. And from here we see, the Mishnah Berurah seems to say a ladle is a kli sheni, whereas before he seemed to say it's a kli rishon. So comes the Shmira Shabbos, and he resolves the steer as follows. He says, there's a machlokas aposkim regarding a ladle. So one should be machmer to consider it a kli rishon. You should try to consider a ladle a kli rishon for all intents and purposes. However, when we're talking about the specific case of bishul achar afia, there's a machlokes whether there's an isser of bishul achar afia. There's already a machlokes over there. So he says what the Chafetz Chaim is doing, he's combining two machlokes together to be lenient. There's a machlokes, the status of a ladle. There's a machlokes, whether you're allowed to take bread and cook it after it's been cooked. On its own, we're machmer in each case. But again, if we combine the situations together and the two worlds collide of a ladle with challah, then you can dip it in. So, and therefore, that's the case where you can dip challah in your soup on Shabbos. Even though the soup is boiling hot, you can dip the challah in the soup when you use the ladle to get it from the kli rishon into the kli sheni, into a kli shlishi. That's only time when the ladle is considered a kli sheni. But on its own, if I were to take a ladle and then take that ladle and pour it onto something that has not been cooked, then that would be iri kli rishon. And it would be like cooking. I don't know what that case would be. I guess noodles perhaps, but I don't know who's going to put hot soup over raw noodles. So I'm not sure exactly.
But you can put it over cooked noodles, obviously.
100%. In that case, we would use the Chavetz Chaim's Ein Bishal Acharaf. And the
noodles
are...
in the pot already. You
don't
have to add them afterwards. Meaning the noodles could be sitting in a dry bowl. And you use the ladle and pour it over it.
Correct.
Right?
100%.
Because it's
sure.
Boiled.
Correct. Noodles that you buy in the package are just dried. It's dried pasta. It's not cooked at any point. Noodles undergo Bishal in a pot. Noodles are not afia. So
you wouldn't put those in. She's saying you would put cooked noodles.
Already cooked noodles.
You already cooked noodles in your bowl and you just put the soup.
Yeah,
100%. If you would buy like the croutons, like those little like
but those are fried.
Those are really cooked.
Those are fried. That also touches upon the kugel over
like,
here as well.
I guess that's like bread.
It's like it's similar to, it's a different method of cooking, and therefore, because it's a machlokas regarding different methods of cooking, combined with the fact the machlokas of the ladle, and therefore will allow you to put croutons in the soup as well. Okay? Yeah.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Go ahead.
Kli rishon is when it's on the fire, right? So
even when it's off the fire.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
So hot plate is considered the fire, but you take your soup off the hot plate.
It's still a kli rishon.
So the pot is still the kli rishon.
As long as it's yatzal eretz bo and it was heated up on a fire, it's considered a kli rishon. Okay. Yeah.
So you know that you're probably going to get to this.
We'll see.
Just in advance. You're going to talk about stirring.
Yeah, we're going to talk about stirring, yeah.
But if you take the ladle, it's not on the fire.
Yeah.
And the pot, so it's a kli rishon, but it's not on the fire.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to take the ladle and not just spoon out, but just mix
stirring
it
is allowed to occur if it's not al gabei ha'esh. If it's not on the fire,
so
allowed to stir. Stirring is only an issue on the fire, correct.
Okay.
Or in addition, you can be lenient with all spices in the soup bowl. You can put all spices you want into it as long as you use a ladle. So, again, I guess if you want to be very adventurous, you could like pour from your soup pot into your soup bowls. But it just makes sense to use a ladle because it's practical and it's better for Shabbos as well. Let's move on now to two more topics, and that is... Yes, please.
So if you take your soup, if you take the ladle, you take out soup, and then you have the ladle out of the pot,
yeah.
Could you put it back in the pot without drying it off? That would be fine.
That would be fine, yeah, because we saw before from Ramosha that once the droplets were already heated up beforehand, so then they would be okay, 100%. Solid foods. There is a concept in halacha called a davar gush. A gush means a piece of something. So a davar gush means a massive or substantial solid item. And the idea is that it maintains its own heat and it does not depend on the walls of a kli around it. Why? Because we explained last week that why does kli sheni work? Why does kli shishi work? Because the walls cool down. The walls come in contact with the liquid's form and it starts to drop the temperature and therefore the liquids don't cook to the same degree. But if I have a solid piece of meat, I have a chunk of meat that was heated up in a kli rishon, and I take it from the kli rishon, I put it on a plate, what's the difference? It's that there's no walls acting on that solid piece of food. I haven't changed anything. It's the same solid piece of meat, and nothing is different in the way it interacts with the world around it.
What about the bottom plate, if you put it onto like a plate?
So we're not going to consider that. Maybe it's not enough. This is the question. So is there a significance to take a dove or gush that was put in a kli rishon, and does it change in any form? A potato, something like that. You have a solid piece of potato that's in the chalent, right? And you move it onto your plate, which is now a kli sheni. Is that potato, and we'll see the implications later on in a moment, but is that potato considered food that's a kli sheni now or a kli rishon?
So you put it directly from the crock pot onto your plate?
What?
What about the...
I have a piece of meat.
What's the question about the food being a cliche? You're eating it. It's a solid piece
good.
Of meat.
Well, good. Well, let's say perhaps you want to put some ketchup on it. Or you want to put something on that food.
Put it in your coleslaw.
Okay? So let's see. There is a sheet of the Maharshal. The Maharshal is from Aluria, cousins of the Rama. They lived at the same time. We have the letters between the two. I love talking about the letters between the Rama and the Maharshal because they are hilarious. And they would write back to each other in very sharp terms. I always like to note that the Rama was very into learning philosophy. He learned the Rambam or Nevuchim and into learning all different types of philosophy. And Maharshal was a traditionalist. He wasn't into this type of stuff. So the Maharshal wrote to the Rama and he said he was critiquing him for his diktuk, for his grammar. If you pay careful attention sometimes to the writings of the Rama will mix up Zachar Nekeva and Rabbi Minyach, things like that, things that you probably haven't thought about since, ninth grade. So they'll, mix those things up. So the Marshal writes to his cousin, he says, maybe if you would spend less time learning philosophy, your diktuk would be better. So the Rama writes back to him, leave me alone, mind your own business. It's just very funny how they write to each other. So the Marshal's in Lublin, the Rama's in Krakow, they're on different sides of Poland, and it's just very funny, to see them interact. So,
what year is that?
This is in the end of right before the 1600s, the end of the 1500s. So we have here a machlokus between the Marshal and the Rama. Machlokus between the two cousins. So the Marshal writes, he's quoted by the Shach in Yoredei in the Laws of Kashrus, and he's quoted as well, he writes in his Yamshal Shlomo, his major work on Gemara. He says that a davar gush, a solid piece of food, that is Yad Sabletuspo, still 120 degrees, it's like a kli rishon. I don't care how many plates you put it on. Nothing is changing its level of bishul because the walls are not acting upon it. And this is the sheet of the Shach as well, in Yoredei and Hilchos Kashrus, the Magen Avraham here. And according to the Marashal, a kli sheni doesn't cook because it doesn't have walls to cool it down. And therefore, by a davar gush that is not having the walls impact on it, it's not being cooled down. Now, this has major implications in the world of Kashrus. And certainly, again, the Marashal is really a halach in Yoredei and Isra v'Hetzer. I have a solid piece of meat, and it's 120 degrees, it's very hot, and, something falls on it. So I have to treat it like a kli rishon regarding all the laws of transfer, of blios, and things like that. Whereas
what would be something like an applicable thing that would fall on it?
A piece of milk, cheese, something like that. I have to. If it just fell on that piece of meat, I would have to treat it like a kli rishon, as opposed to if I have a bowl of soup, or I have something that's liquidy, and something milk falls into it. There are leniencies because it's not a kli rishon anymore. But we'll save that for a kashrus class in many years. I don't know. We'll put that down the road for now.
So,
one day. So the Rama in the Darkei Moshe, he argues, and he says that a davar gush and a kli shein has the status of its container. And this is the Shita of the Vilna Gaon, and they believe that bishul can't occur without external hot walls. Meaning, once that piece of meat is not in its original hot container anymore, then it's not a kli rishon, it's something else, and therefore bishul doesn't occur anymore. Comes the Mishnah Brura, and he writes, again in Simon Shin Yud Ches, and he rules the Chumrah. We treat a davar gush like a kli rishon, and therefore raw foods should not be placed on a davar gush. That's the rule, says the Mishnah Brura. Raw foods cannot be placed on a very hot piece of solid food. Because it's a machlokas, though, and there's a number of leniencies, though. And we're going to go through all those leniencies. We're going to see that it's not something we need to be so scared about over the course of Shabbos. For example, Rav Moshe writes in the Igros Moshe and Chelek Dalid, and he combines two sveikos, two doubts together. That of a davar gush and that of bishal achar bishal for a cooled liquid. And therefore, Rav Moshe says you can put ketchup on your chalent because ketchup is already cooked in the plant, and that's ein bishal achar bishal, plus the fact that it's a machlokus regarding the status of this piece of chalent anyway, and therefore says Rav Moshe, you want to put mustard, ketchup, whatever they cook in the plant on your chalent, not a problem because it's already ein bishal achar bishal. That's one leniency. The Shach says that solid foods that flow and act like a fluid are not considered a davar gush. So for example, like rice, grains of rice. It's true, it's a solid technically, but grains of rice fill up the bowl. They act like a liquid, they flow like a liquid, and therefore you can put uncooked foods on hot rice as well if you wanted to.
But what rice is 120 degrees?
I'm just telling you, if you had rice on degrees, I'm not the chef. I'm just telling you the
I'm thinking to myself, or even your roast, like you're not stirring at 120 degrees. Like,
why not?
If you slice it,
no,
it's not 120
like
degrees.
Sitting, if it was really, really hot,
but think of a potato. Yeah, like a chocolate.
We have to. We need to be. We have to be aware of one thing for a second. We can. Your mouth.
Unless you have.
We have odd ways of viewing heat because your mouth can handle temperatures that are much hotter than you touch. Right? People shower and bathe in water that's hovering above 100,
right,
generally. But you drink coffee that's 160, 170.
Wow.
So your mouth handles liquids that are much hotter than you touch. There's something going on in the cells inside in your mouth. So therefore, what you perceive, that what you can touch, is not necessarily how hot things are when you eat them. So it's not always a good measure.
Once you slice it, also it automatically cools off.
True.
Like by the time you bring it, I mean, it's not cold.
So you also put it on another plate, whatever, all these things, it's going to be fine. Yes?
Right, so that's what I was going to ask you. If you're chilling, you're taking it out of the crock pot, putting it in a bowl, using a ladle to put it in a bowl, and then putting a spoon in it, and then, so do any of these things even apply, even like salad?
Yeah.
Because... Good.
So let's get to the salad. Let's get to the salad discussion, which is generally where people discuss this. So what it would seem, perhaps, that one would be careful if you have, again, I'm particular about how my chalent and my salad and how they don't mix and whatever, but if you have a piece of raw lettuce on the plate and you have a 140, you know, degree piece of potato or a chunk of meat in the chalent, so do you have to be careful that the potato shouldn't touch the salad, it's going to cook it. So, it would seemingly, perhaps, might be usher in such a case. However, comes Rosh Shlomo Zalman Arbach in the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, and he writes, lo nichalei. I'll give you a number of reasons why it's okay. First of all, it's lo nichalei. You don't want your chalent to cook your salad. You're not interested in that happening. The gam gush eino rak safek. And it's a davar gush is a suffek, we're doubtful whether Davar Gush really transfers heat in such a way. And also v'lo miskaven, it's not your intent. V'gam katas kilkul, it's ruining your salad. Forget the fact you don't want it, it's making it not such a good salad. V'hakol derech misasek, and second of all, and fifth of all, he says, you're not even paying attention to it. You have enough going on at the table. You have to pay attention to the conversation, you know, and watch and make sure your three-year-old's not, you know, punching the other one in the face. And also, I got to make sure over here, like, my salad's not touching the chont, he says. You're not paying attention, he says. And therefore, v'ein tam l'chashosh b'zeh, and therefore, he says, what?
Not paying attention to it is a reason why it's okay.
It's what we call misasik. Misasik means that the malacha happens without my being aware. It happens without my knowledge. Misasek is, it's not my, for example, you are waltzing around the house and your hand like smacks into the light and turns off the light. So is that a malacha? Is that you violated Isser and Shemaim? No, because you were unaware of what you were doing at that time. That's not what we call shogeg. Something that's b'shogeg, that means either two things. I didn't know that it was Usser to turn off the lights on Shabbos, or I didn't know it was Shabbos. That's shogeg. Misasek is when I'm unaware of what I'm doing. My favorite...
Maybe against the wall.
Exactly. When somebody,
it happens.
So in the, misasek means that in Shemayim, it's kim'at as if you didn't do anything. It's as if nothing was done. They view it as a total, total accident. My favorite misasek question is, before we get to our last issue for the night, my favorite misasek question always is there's a shiloh that came up once in a different community. There was a family that they were eating out one night, and they were there with the guy was there with his brother-in-law, and they're eating in somebody else's home, and they realized that instead of leaving the key where was, so there was no Erev, instead of leaving the key by the door where they came into the house, the guy had the key on him in his pocket. So he's in his neighbor's house. He's got to walk, you know, half a mile. The key's in his pocket. How are they going to get into their house? The key's on him. So the guy had a good chap. What did he do? When his brother-in-law wasn't looking, he took the key and he slipped in his brother-in-law's pocket. And they walked all the way back. And they got to the house. And the guy said, "Nu, where's the key?" And he reached in his brother-in-law's pocket. He pulled it out and he opened it up and he opened the door and he went inside. So his brother-in-law was furious. He said, "You just had me carry on Shabbos." So the guy said, "No, it was misasek. You didn't know you were carrying. You didn't. You were 100% putzer. Why? And it's not lifnei iver because I didn't cause you to do an avera. Because you didn't do an avera. You didn't. It's not an avera. And
so is that allowed?
So that's a good shaila. It's a good shaila. But that's a good example of misasik. You're totally.
What was the shogeg? Shogeg is if you didn't know if it was Shabbos,
or you didn't know it was Usher to do on Shabbos. You knew it was Shabbos, but I didn't know that I couldn't do that thing on Shabbos. No. I didn't know in the Torah it says you can't carry on Shabbos. I didn't know that halacha. That's shogeg. I was unaware of the halacha. Okay, let's go.
Yeah. Are you allowed to put on this davar gosh a little bit salt and pepper?
Good. So sprinkling salt on hot food is the last topic. Good. So that was a good segue. So can you put a granular substance on a davar gush, salt, on a hot potato? You have hot potatoes for Shabbos Friday night, Shabbos lunch, whatever it is, and you want to put salt on it. Can you do that? So again, in this case, we can be lenient for two reasons. One, according to most shitos, you can put things on a davar gush. Again, davar gush is a chumrah. And second of all, even if we're a machmer about the kli rishon, according to a number of shitos, that maybe in the kli sheni would be okay as well. So the Shmir Shabbos writes, let's listen, he says, Mutter litain melach shulchan or melach bishol. You can put table salt or cook salt, and there must be sea salt, al tapuach adama cham, on a hot potato. And he explains in the footnotes, mikevan shlo namas hamelach, because the salt doesn't really dissolve, umashini masu enu nikr lehedja, you don't really notice what's happening, leislan lamecha shlaha. He says, what the salt is doing, it's really being absorbed into the potato, it's not actually cooking it, and it doesn't truly dissolve, and therefore he says it's not a problem. What about butter? Can you put, I don't know what meal this is happening at, but let's say we're having margarine. You want to put margarine on a hot potato on a davar gush and a kli sheni. So Rav Moshe says, he has a whole shtickle Torah about pasteurization. that since all these milk products are pasteurized anyway, ein bishel achar bishel, he says, and therefore he sees no issue. And even so, it cooled down.
The margarine's
made
in the lab.
Well, okay. So let's. So what? That's what we have to do. That's what we have to do better with butter. So let's go back to the butter and the milk. So
then we'll get to the kashrus.
So it's true that the milk cools down after pasteurization, and we have an issue about reheating cooled liquids, he says. But butter is a solid, and it retains its cooked status after cooling. It's congealed fat, and therefore he wants to be lenient in such a case. Rosh Shlomo Zalman argues. Rosh Shlomo Zalman says no. Bishul might have undergone, once the butter melts, it becomes more like a liquid, he says, and therefore Rosh Shlomo Zalman says no butter on the potato. Again, these are just nafkaminas for what we were discussing before, and therefore, one who is makil to melt butter on these in these situations, you have one short lie because of the leniency is perhaps the davar gush doesn't cook, and because maybe there's ein bishul achar bishul by the liquids, and Rav Moshe is more than enough to rely in such a case. Therefore, when it comes to salt and things like that.
Also pepper, though? Pepper is different than salt. Is it like being pre-cooked over?
Yeah, so by pepper, we might have to be more careful, because you'd have to know how the pepper is made. You'd have to know how the pepper is processed beforehand. Just make an extra spicy chalent, and you'll be good. Okay, fine. So these are, I think this is the highlights for tonight. Next time, we will do the last shiur on Bishul D'Oraisa. We'll discuss, in general, the issues of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, and recooking the liquids, and the congealed fats, and things like that, and the saucy chicken, and all those issues. We'll talk about those things next time. Okay?
But next time is not the next 2 weeks.
Oh, let me turn this off for now, because nobody needs to know our schedule.